Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Flashpoint, where we'll be the spark that ignites the world. With me, of course, Stephen Bannoun. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
I am very happy to be here and excited about today's broadcast.
We have been talking for 2.5 hours, Stephen. We are so excited what is happening. We started at 10:30. It is now 1 o'clock. So we have just over so many things. Let's jump right into it. Okay, Ukraine. What's happening there, Stephen?
Well, you know, the thing is, Ukraine is really kind of gearing up. Ever since this standoff between Ukraine and Russia over the, what would you call it there, Russia taking the tugboat and the two Ukrainian military vessels, overpowering them all over the access of the Azov Sea that is there, that is also supposed to be open for commerce for both Ukraine and, of course, Russia. And the international community has been making it a big issue that Russia is kind of being the bully and the bulldog here. They put in a big ship to block the access. And I'm sure there are issues that are no doubt justified by Ukraine. I don't want to just be here to throw Ukraine under the bus when it comes to this. I know the videotapes, confessions of the Ukrainian Navy. It is obvious they're reading from a script. I'm sitting there watching the guy's eyes follow the script in behind him as they confess to what the Ukrainian government had put them up to it. So maybe threats from Russia has caused them to do so. However, I will say this. We don't see any physical harm that had come to them. Not to say that Russians didn't take a stick and beat them at the waistline, and we don't see that part of it. But nonetheless, they're not like in some cases where you get the guy on camera in the Middle East and their faces are half caved in from the beatings and the confessions come out that way. But there are some things, Obani, that no one has really spoke about that much in the news, and that is how that the Ukrainian Navy has also taken into possession Russian ships, too. It's been like at this point, it's like a tit for tat situation. And when I did see some videos that we didn't get to see in America about the confrontation, there are some that Russia has released as well in their media. And it does show a very provocative movement by the Ukrainian Navy. And at the same time, I have to think and keep in mind, why would Russia be a little nervous about the situation? And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, the Ukrainian government has talked about publicly about blowing up the Kerch Bridge over the Kerch Strait there that Russia just built to bridge the way between the mainland Russia and Crimea. And I know it is a contested decision what happened there, because after the Maidan coup in Ukraine and President Yanukovych was overthrown and had to flee for his own life and the Russian military rescued him, at that point there, Russia had quickly came to the aid of Crimea and had put in their S-400 systems there on the shores where the U.S. could see, because the U.S. and NATO, where they were moving the NATO forces to come up to take Crimea, to help Ukraine take Crimea, even though they're not a NATO member. And the reason for that, too, of course, as Americans, we were saying this was a drill, but Russia said that it was not a drill. They were actually coming to try to take Crimea. But Russia already had a lease with the Ukrainian government for their naval base to be in Crimea, as it's been for decades, actually even before the Soviet Union ever existed, because Crimea was a part of the Russian Federation. They had handed that part of the delegation of the local authority over to the Ukrainian government during the Soviet days. And so therefore, it's why it's a disputed area. But Russia, while they had the control, they allowed the people, not for the first time, mind you, but for the third time, requesting a referendum to be able to vote to go back under the Russian Empire. And they, so according to the results, they did overwhelmingly vote to do that. But I can throw another monkey wrench in that as well, because I have did a private interview with one girl who is a Eastern Russian descent, Ukrainian, that says that Russia was giving out Russian passport 10 years before the coup ever started up to begin with. So maybe there were some contentions long before then, some pre-plans that Russia wanted to make sure that Crimea would be under their own control. So yeah, there's two sides of the coin here. But I'm saying this because what's happening right now is something that most people are not aware of, and that is that Russia and Ukraine have both been moving in some pretty big guns in the area. Russia moved in the S-400 system near the Kerch Bridge there on the Russian side, also in Crimea. And as well, Russia has moved a massive convoy of military tanks, armored personnel carriers there too, to help protect Crimea. And at the same time, the Ukrainians are moving their version of the S-300 system to the area around where the United States is building a military base in Odessa, Ukraine. They're moving in their air defense system. And, of course, many people may not even be aware, Bonnie, that the U.S. is actually building a military base in Ukraine, a nation that's not a NATO member, but we're building a base there. The Navy Seabees are actually on the ground in Odessa, building a military facility. So it's becoming a very tenuous situation. Ukraine is Ukraine quickly trying to become a NATO member to where they have all the NATO states behind it. And obviously they're going to become one because the NATO members are vowing to protect Ukraine against Russia, and they still want to take back Crimea. So I think it's coming, Bonnie. I think it's very much coming, and it's not going to be a very pretty picture when this actually erupts into a war.
No, and when you look at a map, Crimea is the only warm water port that Russia has. So Russia is a sink or swim time for them. Either you defend it or you lose your only warm water port. And that's why it has become such a focus here. And that's why the United States is determined that they should not, because of the larger picture, who's going to control the global wealth, after the United States perishes one way or another economically, judgments of father, judgments or all of the above. I had a question, but it fluttered my mind for a minute. So, this is it. I understand that NATO had asked Turkey to shut the Bosphorus Strait, which is it leads out of the Black Sea area, red, black, green. It's the sea in which Crimea is. So even if Russia controls the Black Sea, they still can't get out, because Turkey, they have to still go through two more straits, the Bosporus and the Straits of Dardanelles. So, and they're both controlled by Turkey. So that's another fight that I see. Stephen, what about you?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that one up, Bonnie, because, I had said often that Russia and Turkey, they may be trying to pretend to have relations together. And I really think that Putin is wanting it to be a good relations for them. But I'm so concerned that what's going to happen ultimately is that it's not going to be a good relations, and it's going to backfire on Russia, because clearly Russia is trying to defend their own sovereignty, their own national interest. And of course, they are going beyond their own borders. But I think, too, what it is Russia is trying to make sure that in defending their national interest, that they maintain their allies that they've had for all this time, which includes Syria, it includes Iran, it includes Lebanon. And at one time, it actually included Ukraine, it included Crimea. They're seeing a lot of their former allies. They're in a tremendous trouble by being undermined by jihadists, by Western-backed rebels that are overthrowing these nations. And, Bonnie, I have a feeling that there may be more that meets the eye to why the world is being radically turned into a war zone And yet at the same time where it's being turned into a war zone, certain places are rapidly going reconstruction and building is going on, which we'll get into a little bit later in the program. But I think there may be some other underlying issues that we're not looking at. And so at this point here, we're just going to have to see how this all plays out.
You know, to put a foundation to it, I'll run this by you, Stephen. The Western bankers are ready to pull off the one global empire. They are Satanists. Satan is telling them it's now, take it now, because of the establishment of Israel. The timeline is, we're on a clock here, people. Get it done or I'll take care of you and I will get somebody else here that can get it done. So the Western bankers are almost hysterical. Of course, why would they do this? What's the motivation? They're being promised great power. Satan will share his kingdom with them. They will live forever. They will be gods. I mean, it's the same stuff he told Adam and Hawa in the garden. And, you know, he's the father of lies. But they know they're on a timeline. A lot of pressure is being put on them. Putin says Western leaders are Satanists. They worship Satan. And, you know, I don't know if he does or not, but I believe that. I mean, he notices it. He realizes it. And they're fighting over who will control the Earth's resources. And there is incredible wealth to be had in Asia. And the Western bankers want it. So, you know, who can challenge the Western bankers? Not South America, not Africa, not, you know, everybody else is part of them. You know, the Far East, you know, as you've said, China is probably going to go with big money. And it's actually the Rothschilds that are helping to finance this incredible infrastructure that will become the One Belt, One Road. The only entity that can challenge them is Russia. So...
That's true.
So that gets, because people sit, I mean, I see them on the television set, you know, talk shows. Well, why would they do it? What is their motivation? Why would they do this to their countries? Why would they decimate Merkel and Sweden and other places, London, the UK? You know, why is May so bent on not obeying the will of her people? Why are these leaders not taking cues from their own populations? It's because there's more candy to be had elsewhere.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, there is a major fight for global domination right now. But, you know, Bonnie, what seems to really be strange is where that fight is taking place. And you know, what's really interesting is the fight is not for the Northern Hemisphere, other than the North Pole, maybe, but we don't see a fight for the taking over of North America. I mean, we do see, like in the case of Honduras, okay, they had a bunch of refugees come up here, try to get into the country, etc. But, you know, and even before we look at that, you know, we've got a number of other hot spots going on right now, including in Syria. And I just got some information from Lorenzo, who is the journalist that runs the website alreadyhappened.com. And he has published now that the United States has created another airstrip in Syria, and it's on the northeastern side, everything on the eastern side of the Euphrates River there. And I know he does have access to some very real-time satellite footage there. And so he's showing what they've actually, how the changes have taken place here just in recent months. And yeah, the U.S. has made a major change for the military airstrip there that is being utilized by the U.S. government. And not only that, Bonnie, also there has been there's an article that just came out about the U.S. This is on in Syrian Arab News, that the U.S. has launched an attack against the Syrian army near Homs in the countryside there in support of ISIS militants. I mean, that just blows me away. So they said here, this was on December 3rd, the U.S.-led international coalition launched a new aggression against positions of the Syrian Arab army in Homs' eastern countryside in support of the terrorist organization ISIS, which is a tool to implement its schemes in the region. And of course, now that's their opinion as far as how they're doing it, but it does make sense because you have to understand, even John Kerry had said that, you know, they were sitting back watching to see if ISIS could take and topple the Syrian government single-handedly without the U.S. having to get its own military involved. And that's why they never stopped. But there's been too much leaked information, too much that's been going on to show all this. And even more recently, and this is a little side note, but Mr. Peranto, who was the military army, former army ranger that was in the Benghazi massacre, where, as they say, Hillary Clinton would not give the support that was needed to these private contractors that were working to help protect the CIA assets on the ground there. And their compound, of course, wasn't far from the American compound, and the attack that ensued that cost the lives of many, including some special force operatives that were protecting the CIA. But, you know, I had been saying, Bonnie, for a long time on Israeli News Live, I used the sources such as Seymour Hersh, American journalist, Aaron Erdem, the parliamentary member of the Turkish government, all of which had confirmed that the U.S. from Libya, courtesy of the CIA, had smuggled in sarin gas through Turkey in the hand of ISIS, in the hand of al-Nusra, to be launched originally in 2013. Well, oddly enough, and I think Peranto's first name is Alan, if I remember right, I'm just going off of memory, he got into a Twitter debate. And in his Twitter debate with the former CIA director that was over that operation there, he was slamming him. And he says, well, why don't we just tell the truth? Why don't we talk about how that the CIA is working to go against political figures and to manipulate and I forget some of the other verbiage he used against political figures. And he says, and oh, while we're at it, should we say too how that we were shipping weapons to the rebels in Syria, and he mentioned specifically ISIS, via that of Turkey? And I'm like, I've been saying it all along. And yet the mainstream media has been blasting the narrative that Bashar al-Assad is the one gassing his people. And finally, here we have an American war hero that they didn't treat him like that when he come back from Benghazi. Instead, they wanted to treat those that had fought to save what lives they could save as if they were some kind of criminals. But he finally speaks out. I guess he couldn't take it anymore. And he releases on Twitter some of this information. Now, I don't know if they have kept his Twitter account up, because I was trying to get back on his Twitter account the other day, and I could not even find his Twitter account at that point. So that, or maybe they blocked me from being, because I wanted to follow what he was doing. And so, you know, who knows? Maybe I got blocked on that. But
I'd be surprised if you could even find him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he was part. You know, when they made the movie about Benghazi, that came as a result, too, of his willingness to tell about what was going on. But I noticed in the movie that they never fully disclosed everything that had happened in that movie. And I know that he's spoken out a couple of times. I think he'd been on Fox News, things like that, trying to say what really went on inside of Benghazi. And, you know, and I'm just really quickly trying to pull up to see if I can get anything just on the internet. So I get out, because I want to make, yeah, Chris Peranto is his name.
And I'm surprised that the U.S. would, I mean, Russia would allow the U.S. to keep bombing in Syria.
They're doing it for one reason, Bonnie, and that is for the Silk Road, for that initiative that's been set forth from
Russia,
the very
beginning. Russia?
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you meant you, – okay, why would Russia still allow it?
I mean, they have the 400s now. They, you know, I don't know if the F-16s can also, you know, be mechanized, be retrofitted to foil the S-400 system. But, I mean, bombing in Syria was supposed to be a red line for Russia, I thought.
Well, here's where the problem comes in. And I approached this question to one of the colleagues with RT that I have a relationship with there. And he shared with me, he said that Russia in the Middle East, this is not their turf. He said to try to make sense of what we're saying here. He said, you have to understand Russia knows that the U.S. has a dominant presence in the Middle East. And for Russia, they've never established a presence like the U.S. And the U.S. has bases everywhere. The military with all to wage war in the Middle East like no other nation on the planet. And he said, so Russia has to do things in a very calculated way, and they have to weigh their risk and their options. And he told me, he said, if Russia were to suddenly get into a fight with the United States in the Middle East, he told me, he said, they would lose. He said, even though they have the S-400, you know, because that was my other issue question too, he said, you can still overwhelm the system. And he said, America, with the NATO allies, have such a strong presence in the Middle East, they can't overwhelm it. But I mean, they can't defeat an overwhelming attack. He said, now, but there's the other side of it, too. He said, too, that the United States also knows if they get into a confrontation with Russia, yes, they would win on that platform there. But they know that Russia has a more superior nuclear force than the United States does. And they fear retaliation of the United States and what they could actually do in return to the mainland USA. And as a result, this is why the U.S. also is not just over there blowing Russia up out of the water. But at the same time, I've got people in the Israeli intelligence community saying to me that Russia needs to get out while they have a chance, because if they don't, they're going to force them out. So now is in there, in that case, then, is the Israeli military, really believing that the U.S. has their back that strongly that they can make that assertion? And at the same time, too, Israel is also getting military hardware sent to them from the United States that would give them the ability to take on such a massive campaign if they were to have to do that. And at the same time, another thing I'm watching, too, Bonnie, and this is kind of interesting because it goes back to George H.W. Bush. It actually goes to his son, George Bush, when he was president of the United States. If we remember how he was really making his public campaign for, how would I call this? He was making the public campaign to the American people, to the justification of when we needed to, you know, for going to war with Iraq. Even though Iraq had nothing to do whatsoever with the Twin Towers, et cetera. But nonetheless, that ended up being the country. Saudi Arabia was, if anybody was involved as far as Middle Eastern partners, it would have been Saudi Arabia, which they say all the bombers come from Saudi Arabia. So why didn't you take on Saudi Arabia? No, it had to be Iraq. Well, the point being is that Saudi Arabia is doing the exact same thing now with their princes to the Saudi public. I have been watching how that the Saudi princes have been coming on their own television there in Saudi Arabia, and they're launching forth a campaign in the public perception in the different mosques inside of Saudi Arabia. And they are claiming, too, that they need to partner with Israel. They are making that justification that due to the threat of Iran, that there does come a time when Saudi Arabia should take as a partner Israel to fight the battles that they need to fight in the future. So that lets me know that just as Bush groomed the American public to accept the war on terror, as it was called, because of, as they said, Al-Qaeda took down the Twin Towers, which, by the way, they say now that anywhere in the world when we fight a foe, we say it's Al-Qaeda. Why? Because George Bush was able to pass that through Congress, that Al-Qaeda was a terrorist organization and we have a war on terror, and therefore you really don't even need congressional approval if you're fighting against Al-Qaeda. That's already been passed now. And so every battle, whether it be in Yemen, whether it be in Syria, whether it be in Lebanon, it's Al-Qaeda. So I think we're getting close to that halftime, Bonnie. I'm sure we are.
Yes, we are. That's just what I was going to say. Stay with us, folks, for the second half.
Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second half of Flashpoint. Okay, Stephen, we left off in the Ukraine. Once provoked, Russia's only recourse finally will be against an enemy that they realize is on a protracted war stronger than they are, is to nuke America. So on the heels of that we just discussed, please take it away on Ukraine and Syria.
It is definitely, Bonnie, it's just heating up regardless. And even while we were at break, we had other news beginning to break with Ukraine. Lorenzo, and already happened, was sharing on his Twitter page, actually sent me a private message that the Ukrainian government was moving tanks into Mariupol. But it was kind of odd, Bonnie. It was unmarked tanks. They were brought in by soldiers in fatigues that wore no insignia on their uniforms, and they brought 7 tanks into Mariupol. Now, those of you that are maybe driving in the car, if you're listening to this on the radio or at your home, whatever the case may be, you kind of got a picture in your mind the country of Ukraine. We know Crimea, that little island off the coast there. Mariupol is to the east of Crimea, but in the mainland of Ukraine, but right on the Sea of Azov, just before you get to the Russian border. Now, I did happen to just quickly look real fast just to see if Russia was saying anything about this, if there was any clue that this was going on. Oddly enough, about an hour before Lorenzo had published this, Russia also had seen that the Ukrainian government was moving the T-64, which is a Russian-made tank, or Soviet-era, I should say, made tank, into this area. And it is believed by Russia that one of the two would happen. Either they're going to take and use the tanks for a provocation and make it look like Russia did it, or that the Donetsk region, which is the eastern part, the breakaway region, that they have launched an attack on civilian populations and blame it on one or the other. I kind of lean towards the Russian side, because there's also an article that came out today from the Ukrainian government, the general of Ukraine, and he is saying that Russia is building up massive forces all around Ukraine, and they anticipate a strike by Russia at just any moment. Well, what better way than to make it look like Russia did it than to put 7 tanks in Mariupol, slip them over by the Russian border, maybe even just get it on the edge where it doesn't look like it's in, where the Ukrainian people don't know, and then start shelling the mess out of the Ukrainians and say, wow, Russia has attacked. We need NATO to come in here to defend us. What a mess, Bonnie. What a mess. I don't know what to think of this.
Where would that lead? Would that be it? Would that trigger the conflagration?
Well, here's the thing. It depends on the response of the Ukrainian government. If they were to then launch a preemptive strike against Russia, then Russia would respond. But the provocation would give NATO the edge to say, well, Ukraine was firing in self-defense, and now Russia is the aggressor. The advantage we have is, at this point, as journalists, is to expose this as much as we possibly can to the public, so that the public is aware before they make the provocation. Lorenzo was writing me privately saying that he's had threats for posting the images on his Twitter account and even on his website, that he had to take it down or else. Of course, he didn't share with me what the "or else" was, but that's pretty provocative.
By whom?
Threatened. He didn't say who. He just said that he's had several people writing him, telling him he better remove these images off of his Twitter page or else.
And the images were concerning NATO buildup, or just buildup in Ukraine, or what?
That's the 7 tanks, the 7 unmarked.
Oh, I see. This specifically that we're talking about right now.
Yes, absolutely. And so that seems to give more, well, I guess it would depend on who did the threat. You know, if it was Ukraine that was threatening him, or officials, or even, I would assume they were doing it anonymously anyway, but if, let's say it is Ukrainian officials, but they're doing it anonymously, telling him he better remove these images off of Twitter, then that would seem to give more credence to the article that came out in the Russian paper that they're getting ready to stage a provocation, which is interesting because this is what's happening in Syria all the time. There's always the provocations, mostly in the case of, we've seen the chemical attacks that have come upon the Syrian nation multiple times, always blamed on Bashar al-Assad, and in which I had many times defended the President Assad because of people like Aaron Erdem, Seymour Hersh, the American journalist, that all had the evidence that that sarin gas was smuggled out of Libya and into Turkey and then assembled by ISIS militants and taken in to Syria, used against the civilian population. Well, oddly enough, though, Bonnie, this is another side note here, but oddly enough, it was Chris Paranto, who is the famed war hero of Benghazi. In fact, they did the movie called Benghazi. He contributed to the information of that movie. He was there, and he got into a Twitter debate with the CIA operative that was working in Libya at the time, and they got into a war of words just recently this past week. And I don't know if Chris's Twitter account got removed or if they're just blocking me from being able to see his account. But the next thing I know, I can't find his account anymore on Twitter. And I'd signed up to following. And at the same time, when he got into that war of words with the CIA operative on there, he gave away the truth about the weapons that were being smuggled from Libya, courtesy of the CIA, into Turkey to be used for the ISIS militants in Syria. And I'm like, no, that's a real hero, a man that's willing to tell the truth. And he even says to the CIA guy, he says, while we're at it, let's just go ahead and level the playing field. Why don't we tell the Americans what really goes on? Why don't we tell them about how the CIA spends their time discrediting politicians and overthrowing them, and how that we even arm ISIS, sending them weapons via Turkey to get it into Syria. I'm like, wow, now we got three witnesses. Aaron Erdem, we have Seymour Hersh, and now Chris Paranto, who is the working as a private contractor, a former Army Ranger, that was hammered down in this fight for his life and saving the American lives when the attack happened inside of Libya, which kind of makes you wonder if that wasn't a staged attack to make sure there were no witnesses after that sarin gas was being smuggled out of Libya and put into the hands of ISIS militants to go against the Ukrainians. Very, very interesting situation there. But this is what we're seeing in Ukraine now.
They deep sixed his Twitter account. I would not be surprised to learn they've deep sixed him too. Isn't Lorenzo Italian?
Yes, he is. He's
so really, the Ukrainians, you know, couldn't do much about him. So the threats must have come from something not regional, but more global.
They may have, because with Lorenzo being in Italy, there is strong support by the NATO allies for Ukraine. And oddly enough, of course, Ukraine is not a NATO member, but they all seem to be willing to fight for Ukraine against Russia. The United States Navy, we're putting a naval base in Odessa, Ukraine right now. We have the Navy Seabees actively building that base. In fact, Lorenzo just had put up also the U.S. military built another air base on the eastern side of the Euphrates in northern Syria. That can go along with the one they built near Al-Tanf, Syria, down the southern border by Jordan. But now we've built a second airstrip inside of Syria. And it just kind of makes you wonder, Bonnie, where are we going with all this? Why are we having so much war in the Middle East? I used to say quite often it's for the One Belt, One Road initiative, for the, as we say it, the famed ancient Silk Road, reestablishing the world's economies, once again linking the entire world together, which is a very famous slogan with the One Belt, One Road initiative that is allegedly started by President Xi Jinping back in, I think, 2013. But the reality of it is it was a Jewish man from Hungary that actually introduced this idea. And that was quickly hushed up so that it could be brought out at a later date. But at the same time, we've also discovered that a lot of Rothschild banking monies went to the Chinese government to fund the Silk Road Initiative. But I say this, Bonnie, because here's what's coming that's really kind of puzzling me. We're seeing so much fighting, and all that fighting is seems to be centered around the Middle East. It's centered around African nations. Just like General Wesley Clark mentioned, when he mentioned the seven nations, he said we would start with Iraq. We would go to Syria, Lebanon, Sudan, Libya, and finishing off with Iran. Maybe I missed a country somewhere in there. But that puts us down in Africa, Northern Africa, Southeastern Africa, puts us all through the Middle East areas. And at the same token, we're seeing a lot of unrest in South America. Well, if you look at the Silk Road maps, this One Belt, One Road initiative, Bonnie, as I was, and I have studied the images, including adding the name, the United States, Canada, to the One Belt, One Road maps, just type in that into Google, look at the images, nowhere. And I could be wrong. Maybe I'm missing something, but I've gone through hundreds of images. All those initiatives only cover the Middle East. They cover Africa, India, China, all the Asian areas. It covers parts of Europe. It covers Moscow. And they've even agreed to do the Arctic Circle. But Bonnie, and even South America, they actually bring it around to South America. Nowhere do we see the Silk Road images showing the maps, and this includes the maritime trade. But they don't show any railroads. They don't show any maritime trade going to the United States or going to Canada. Doesn't that make us wonder why? Shouldn't we stop for a moment and ask ourselves that question?
If people would know that, Stephen, hence the the importance of radio stations such as Hebrew Nation Radio that brings you Stephen every week. We're gone. North America is gone. They're not in there, and you have to ask why. Absolutely, what happens to us? Yes.
Absolutely. And this is one reason why, you know, your support to Hebrew Nation Radio is important. It's valuable. The thing is we're coming to a place in this life right now. And with me saying this, the United States, North America, basically, including Mexico, their region, is not a part of that initiative. The question would be is why, and of course, I have actually examined the possibility, the very real possibility of war coming to this nation as one result, and even what I'm about to share with you, it does not detract from the fact that we still may see war here. But we have not talked about in a long time the famous Planet X or Nibiru. I know as far as Nibiru, there's been a lot of debunking of Sitchin's work on the stuff that he did. But I'm not looking at his work. I'm looking at astronomers like the astronomer from South America, from I think in Argentina, that spoke about this. He called it a planet comet. That makes an elliptical orbit that he had been tracking himself as an astronomer, that this thing would go by the Earth ever so many thousands of years, and that it was due to be coming in our solar system in the very near future. Now, he was very old, and he said he was finally wanting to tell the public before he died that it's coming. Well, oddly enough, Bonnie, when I was in Kansas at the conference that we had some friends of our host there, there was a man that came up, a very well-educated man, and I think his studies is in astronomy as well. he brought to me a little memory stick, with he said, he told me had detailed information about this incoming. He had a very, very fanciful word for it. He didn't call it Nibiru. He did not call it Planet X. He had the educated term for it, I guess you would say. And he said to me, he said, it is coming. And he said on the disc that he was giving me actually has images of it. He said he used infrared photography to be able to photograph it. He said you cannot see it without infrared imaging. And he suggested that the North American continent will be the most affected by the passing of this planet. Now, one thing, he also brought up the scientists from South America. And he said, it's going to happen. He said, there's just no way out of it. And I asked him, does he have any idea when it's coming? He said, out of all the satellite imagery he had access to be able to plot the course of this, there was one more that he needed access to, he could not gain access to, that he said would have given him the ability to actually track the timeline of its orbit. And he doesn't have that. He said, so I cannot do it. He said, all I can do is give you an educated guess between 2020 and 2025 is my rough guesstimation, as he said, that this would pass through. Needless to say, as we were discussing this, then I began to wonder whether it's a combination of both or even only one, if it's only war that comes to North America that devastates this nation, or whether or not it's even with this, something coming by the planet. Some say, well, there's no Planet X, it's just a huge meteorite that's coming. Well, either way, if something causes a cataclysm to this Earth that affects North America, as we've heard about the visions and prophecies, and even the map that was produced by the United States military that shows the middle of America just ripped apart by an earthquake, the West Coast, tidal waves and everything taking place, it would devastate this nation.
And maybe that's why we're not included on the menu of the One Belt, One Road, because they know that we, as a physical continent, are going to be devastated. And when you look at the trumpets, you know, in Revelation 8, the first one is hail and fire mixed with blood. Well, this could well be the melting of the iron core of an asteroid, and the hail, that's the blood. The hail could be the breaking up of the ice surrounding the iron ore, the iron core. A third of the world was burned up because that's the part of the Earth that was facing the impact. And you just go on here. The second angel, a huge mountain, was thrown into the sea. The third angel, a great star blazing like a torch, fell from the sky and turned the water probably radioactive. A fourth angel, a third of the moon and stars and sun were struck. This could be the impact of the dust thrown into the atmosphere. The fifth angel opens up, the impact opens up the shaft of the abyss that is located, goodness, you know, I was thinking this was at the Euphrates, oh yeah, okay, the abyss, and out came locusts that they could kill people. This is evidently different from the sixth angel who opens up the great river Euphrates. You know, L.A. Marzulli, I'll mention the conference. Yana and Stephen and L.A. Marzulli are going to be at Canopy Grove in January 18 through 20. The website is soldiersofthelion.com. Soldiersofthelion.com. And they're going to be speaking. L.A. has said that the soldiers that saw the Nephilim or the in Afghanistan, and actually they killed a giant. The thing was 13, 14 feet tall. It ate American soldiers. The local people told this soldier that they don't want to serve at the prison that's over the Euphrates because there are demons in there. He said that he's heard that there's a place under the Euphrates where actually demons are bound. So anyway, these demons are let loose. All of the trumpets seem to be involving an asteroid attack, something hitting this earth. And when you look at this comet, asteroid, a binary star, and that whole system, it has different planets or moons around it. And when it came through the asteroid belt, which some think were formed by a previous passing of this binary star, they smashed a planet, and all the asteroids in the asteroid belt are the remains of that planet, who even in their broken forms still maintain their path. But a binary star has tremendous electromagnetic, all kinds of radiation and magnet abilities, and it magnetically draws these asteroids into its tail. So when the Earth goes through its tail, we're hit with all these meteors. You will be speaking on this at the conference. Is that correct, Stephen?
Yes. Once I have a chance to really go through the information that's been shared with me, and of course, I've not even been able to open the file as of yet. But once I get this file open and can go through it, I will share that. And of course, whatever other information I'm able to research on this, and we'll do that on the closing on Sunday.
Yes, on the closing. The conference has been lengthened till 3 o'clock on Sunday. Again, we start at dinner time on Friday evening. Angie and Roland Betts will be doing the worship dancing service on Friday night. LA opens. We go all weekend until 3 o'clock on Sunday. And this will be maybe some of the last words, the soldiers of the lion get to hear on, you know, what's coming. What are the days of Noah going to be like? What can you do about it? Do you have any defense? And really to gear yourself up mentally, spiritually, to face what we have to face. So once again, that is soldiersofthelion.com. And Stephen will open this, and he will get the information, and he will have this information available if Father wants it. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've prayed over it. So, Nibiru.
So, it's coming, and there's nothing I guess we can do to stop these things here, except, this is regardless of what happens in this life, you know, Bonnie, whether it be war or whatever, we know even Yeshua has warned about these things. In Matthew 24 specifically, he talks about the things that are going to happen on this earth. But, you know, the one thing that caught my attention, too, about this, Bonnie, is the fact that, and I brought this up recently when I was talking about war coming to this nation, because I was getting information from a friend with Israeli intelligence that was saying that, hey, you guys better get out of that country while you have a chance. But, you know, he also told me the elite of this nation and the politicians, etc., they will be taken out of this nation. Well, I have a feeling where they're going, Bonnie, and I'll say this in closing, they're going to those ghost cities of China and, of course, Africa as well, where they have set up entire cities. As one man described it, he was looking at just one of the 50 cities in China that no one lives in. He said it was like Manhattan, skyscrapers for businesses and offices. Well, why do you think we moved all of our industry over to China back in the 80s and 90s? They have known about this, I think you even pointed out, Bonnie, since 1984. So, hey, something's coming. We need to be ready and have your heart and soul ready. Know Yeshua. If you don't know him, please, I beg you to take the time to go to your knees and find out who Mashiach is, to know Yeshua before the hour is over.